Welcome to the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast, where we untangle the past, rewrite the present, and reclaim our future. I am your host, Tammy Vincent, and together we will break free from old patterns, heal wounds, and create new narratives. Are you ready to transform the effects of your dysfunctional past into your superpowers? Are you excited to get back in touch with your true, authentic self? If so, then hit subscribe and join me weekly on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. Here we will learn from experts as well as experienced thrivers how to turn our trials into smiles while living our most authentic and joyful lives. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome again to another edition of Adult Child of Dysfunction. Today we have with us Alana Davidson. She is the author of the book, Finding Your Own Happy, The Soul Searcher's Guide to Peace and Happiness in Everyday Life. She specializes in helping empathic and sensitive folks put an end to emotional exhaustion, drain, and overwhelm, heal their past pain and trauma, and reclaim their confidence so that they can experience true peace and happiness and navigate through the world with ease. Her professional training spans decades of study and exploration in fields of consciousness, spirituality, psychology, personal development, and energy healing, and along with her natural empathic intuitive abilities, inform her work with clients. Welcome, Alana. So glad to have you here today.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be here and to have this conversation with you.
So tell us a little bit more about, I mean, I don't think there's anybody in this realm of healing that wants to heal other people that didn't have a need to heal themselves at some point. So talk to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my struggles were with depression starting when I was probably 11 years old up until my 30s. So my book is a lot of the things that I explored and the journey I went on to figure out how to get sort of to the bottom of the things I was struggling with and to a place of greater happiness in my life. And on that journey, I uncovered that my family was not as wonderful and lovely and normal, whatever, as I thought it was. And that actually I had been very deeply impacted by my upbringing, by my childhood in ways that I just, for the longest time, I could never put my finger on, but then started to see for what they were. So for the purpose of this show, that's probably the most sort of relevant piece of my history.
Okay. So you said that you suffered from depression from the time you were 11 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, so
go ahead.
Sorry. I lost a teacher when I was 11. He'd been my teacher for 4 years. Now looking back, call him my third parent. He was the most attentive and present adult in my life who like actually saw me and had time for me. And he died and I got no support from anybody in my life around it. And I didn't realize until I was into my 20s that it had actually impacted me at all. I thought, oh, I'm fine. It's not a big deal. Really, it was so impactful that my 11-year-old self could not deal with it and had to shut myself off from that experience.
So that was what you would consider the bulk of your childhood trauma. But you said that going forward, you found out after.
Well, yeah. That's the beginning of where I really set into the depression. But the truth is my parents were very unemotionally available my entire life.
Okay.
And really, for me, what became so traumatizing was not the emotional neglect or lack of presence in my life, but the complete denial that it was abnormal, problematic, or actually happened. So what I see as a form of gaslighting, basically, like, what are you talking about? You had it so good. You got all these things that we never had as kids. Basically, my view of my mom is she could not see herself as anything other than the perfect mother. And to face that I had been in a lot of pain about my experience in childhood was just didn't track with her reality. And so she just basically, until this day, continues to deny that she was outside of the range of normal. Now, as I grow up and talk to other people and will describe some of the things that happened in my childhood, they'll be like, your mom, what? Like, that's not normal. I'm like, yes, thank you. I know, But for my mom, it was normal. There's this moment, maybe this will speak to your audience, but my mom said to me, we were having a fight. I was probably in my early 30s. We were having a fight about her not being there for me when I was a kid. And she said to me, "Well, you told me I hate you, go away." And I felt rejected. And when she told me that as her explanation for why she couldn't parent me and why she couldn't be there for me, it was a really eye-opening moment because I knew at that moment if that's what she thought of as appropriate response to her kid and appropriate level of parenting, we were never gonna agree, right? Our definitions were so far apart that it was like, I'm gonna stop having this argument now because if you think that's okay, then of course we're always gonna be in conflict around this issue. So then I had to start really validating for myself, okay, no, this hurt. This didn't feel good. Like I have a right to my feelings. I deserve something I didn't get, all that kind of stuff. So those are kind of several of the layers that contributed to like feeling like, what's wrong with me? I must just be screwed up because so if I'm having an emotionally appropriate response to what happened to me, but in my family's eyes, it didn't actually happen, then my feelings are invalid. And so if the thing I'm upset about was not worthy of being upset about, then clearly I just must be screwed up and my upset must be the problem, right? Not the actual things that were happening. So that was a lot of twisted upness for a long time that I finally in my 30s started to sort out and be like, you know what? Actually, no, that wasn't normal. And I had every right to feel upset about what happened.
And when you have those emotionally unavailable parents anyway, like you said, that didn't traumatize you, but it definitely did some damage on your psyche. As far as not feeling loved and worthy. And because if you got that response, like you said, I mean, I can't even imagine if my child lost a teacher or a friend or anything, the empathy and the compassion and the love that I would have showed them and hugging them and letting them bawl their eyes out or whatever they needed to do, punch pillows, whatever it was, but to just be like, suck it up, buttercup, get over it. They're not your mom. They were just a teacher, or that kind of thing would have been so traumatic as a child. I can't even imagine.
Well, and really, like, yes, the emotional neglect itself, yes, there was some like trauma and pain from that, but it's really this cognitive dissonance, right? To say, not only did I have this painful experience, but I can't have the feelings around it. And I really, at one point in my life, I felt like it would have really been so different. And I probably wouldn't have had to go into such dark, depressive states if either of my parents had said, "Yeah, you're right. We're really sorry that we couldn't be there for you in the way that you needed." And like that was, oh, of course that would have hurt. Like, what a different, then I could have gotten over it and healed from it so much sooner. But that was never, I mean, my dad at one point, my dad has passed away, but at one point in my life, he did briefly acknowledge that maybe he hadn't been the parent that he wished he could have been. And so that was helpful for sure to have that little bit of validation. And now I just, so I think in this healing journey, right, for all of us is if you can't receive the acknowledgement of validation from your family, or if you're looking around and going, is this normal? Am I the crazy one? Then seek insight and perspective from people beyond your family, because it can get the family dynamic can get so twisted up and so confusing. If you can zoom out a little bit and get a perspective from people that maybe weren't immediately in it or can give you some sounding board, then you can start to sort out better your experience. And I've had the fortunate opportunity of talking with somebody who was sort of a little further removed from my life when I was a kid, but she was there and I played with her children. And so she was witnessing for a little bit from the outside what was happening. And in recent years, she's been able to say, you know what? I see what you're talking about. And at the time, we really wondered how you were doing and if everything was okay. And so that was just so reassuring to me, right? Like, oh, what I knew to be true at this deep level, and also being a sensitive person and could sense that something was off, like, oh, that is valid. I do have a right to that experience.
Well, and that's so important because as kids, adult as anything, we just need to have our feelings validated and to not, like you said, you were ga completely gaslighted. I remember times it's kind of like just my first marriage. I remember people saying, and I would say, oh, well, he said this. And they're like, you know, that's not cool. Like, that's not how people talk to people that they care about. And I'm like, oh, really? You know, it was so because I didn't know. You don't know what you don't know. You grew up thinking that was normal, but at the same time, it hurts. And you're like, that can't be normal. So you trust that the people that are supposed to be
Or
your
when
caregivers will validate it. And they don't. And that's,
Right.
yeah.
And when you bring your upset or your concern or your, like, I used to be in these arguments with my mom, right? And it was always like, what are you talking about? And so, what happened for me also because of the traumatic loss when I was 11, I had trouble differentiating from my parents. So instead of just being like, F you, I know what I know and I experience what I s experience, and this is not okay. Because of this attachment wound, I was so scared of losing the relationship, you losing the attachment with my parents, that I, in order to maintain connection with them, I felt like I had to just align and agree with them, right? So,
Right.
like, oh, if they're not going to validate what I'm saying, it's too psychologically threatening based on the trauma of losing a caregiver to stake claims in my own opinion and differentiate. So
Right. You're
I'm going
not.
to just align with what my parents say is true and abandon my own truth to maintain that sense of connection, because I, on a very subconscious level, didn't feel like I was going to be okay or survive if I didn't have my parents' love and approval.
Well, and that's very
So,
normal. I'm, yeah,
yeah.
that's exactly what you can
And it
expect
was
should have
until my
happened.
30s, somebody said, yeah, somebody when I was in my early 30s, he's like, have you ever like rebelled against your parents? And like, have you ever like, and he was describing his sister having these like crazy fights with his parents. I was like, oh, wait, no. And that's when I was like, oh, I need to be able to differentiate and claim my truth, even if they can't receive it, even if it creates conflict, it creates tension. I'm owning what I know to be true and recovering my authentic self, which has been at the expense of, you know, my authentic self was at the expense of the relationship with my parents, right? I gave up my authentic self in order to stay connected to them and functioning within their scope of reality.
Exactly. And it doesn't have to even be, I mean, yours was because of this 11-year-old trauma that all of a sudden you do need, your brain is there to protect you. And it's even like when it happens to a child, like it happened to me much, much, much younger, but my brain is never going to believe that the people that are supposed to love and care for me are doing that kind of damage. So to me, it's not that my parents were bad or wrong, it's that I must have done something terrible. So in the same thing, you just conform
Absolutely.
and
And
yeah, you do. That's what your brain does.
I
And
mean, that happens a lot, you know, in some of the study and the work that I've done. I really see over and over again this experience of young children. It's often younger than I was, but young children, right? You are going to maintain connection with your parents at all cost because that's what you require for your survival. Now, if something if they have space to receive your emotionally appropriate feelings and so forth, then you can stay connected with those. But if they cannot, you are going to abandon yourself and your feelings every time to maintain that relationship of connection. And like you said, It's way too scary for a kid up until a certain age of psychological development to think that there is something off or wrong with their parents because they depend on them for their very survival. So you're going to make your parents like gods. You're going to keep your parents in that glowing light. And if anything is off, instead of like if your parents are messed up, you're screwed. So, okay, it can't be them. They have to be perfect. So let me internalize the experience with my parents so that I have some power, so that I have a chance at survival, so that I can be okay. If it's something wrong with me, then I can figure out how to fix it. I can be better, do better, whatever. But if my parents are just out to lunch, uh-oh, I'm doomed.
I'm
So
in
that's a
trouble.
very common trouble that I see a lot. Like I definitely see it in my own journey. I see it a lot with the clients I work with. I can't tell you how many times, usually in the first call that I have with them, we are very quickly back to a usually 3 to 5 year old self that has some pain or hurt that they never got to be acknowledged for, they never got to be validated for, that has been, they've been carrying around. I mean, these are people sometimes in their 50s and 60s, you know, carrying around their entire lifetime. And such a beautiful healing and weight is lifted when they can finally be seen and held for that hurt that they carried. And just makes such a huge shift. I mean, I've seen it just transform people's experience of life, like practically overnight, just to be that. And a lot of what I've come to believe and studied in this work is that part of what makes the difference between people who go through, let's say, horrific, abusive kinds of childhoods and come out sort of okay or on top, and the people who end up in perpetual pain and hurt or in jail or things like that is whether or not they were able to have emotionally appropriate responses to what happened to them. And what allows them to do that is if they had a validating empathic witness for their experience. So maybe you grew up in a horrific household, but you had a caring teacher or auntie or coach, somebody in your life that saw you and could validate what you're going through. That can make a world of difference versus the person who had no outlet. And then it just had to go underground. It went into the subconscious and then plays out in all of these different ways throughout somebody's life. So that's also a lot of the work that I do is helping people reconnect with the truth of their experience if they haven't been able to have emotionally appropriate responses to the things that happened to them so they can integrate them and bring more wholeness back to themselves and then move forward from a more whole place.
Exactly. And I tell people you don't have to go back and relive it. You just have to go back and accept that it happened and give it a name. And sometimes it's like you said, sit with it. You have to sit with it. You have to name it. You have to, some people are like, no, it was just my parents and they were doing this and they were doing that. And it's no, it was neglect. It was neglect. So let's just start there
And
and
that's
then
an
we.
easy distancing. I see that a lot. It's an easy distancing strategy with the way that people distance themselves from the impact of their pain is to say, oh, they were doing the best they could with what they had, which is true. It doesn't simultaneously invalidate the impact it had on you and the pain it had on you. And part of the problem, so to speak, that I see with that approach of addressing trauma is then the dynamic plays out in other ways in your adult relationships. So you dismiss maybe unkind or uncaring behavior that mirrors the behavior of your childhood for other people. You're likely to accept a lot more abuse or trauma from the people around you because you know. So the way I see it is your emotions are sort of like a, they're information, right? And they tell you about the impact that something is happening for you. If you had to shut off that sort of warning signal that like something's not okay for you and you learn how to mute it, then going through your, if you never sort of wake that up, going through the rest of your life, it's muted. So when those similar types of things happen, that warning signal doesn't go off and alert you that there's a problem. And then you end up down the road wondering, how did I get here? Maybe it's a relationship that's dysfunctional or a friend taking advantage of you or whatever it is. And you're like, how did I end up here again? It's well, that emotional response has been taken out of your vocabulary, basically. So you don't even, you just plow right over it. And then you end up at the same sort of end point over and over, wondering what happened. Well, the key is in, I think, recognizing and being able to acknowledge the impact of the things that happened to you and the hurt that they did have, the emotions that they did have, right? Not so, not to relive them, not to blame anybody, so that, but so that you can be more sensitive and tender to your own self and your own experience and the subtle ranges of feelings that are giving you information about navigating the world in a way that is healthy and kind and supportive for you.
Absolutely. And just being, like you said, being aware, first of all, being the awareness is 100% of the key because I tell people, I remember the first time I went to a therapist and they asked me how I felt about something. And I'm like, feel, like, I don't know how to feel. And it took me a long time to just be able to muster up an emotion and period. And then it's like, okay. So then I started writing down, like, okay, that was anger. That was fear, that was shame, that was hurt, and feeling these things. And then I could go farther and take a step farther and going back and finding out when those things developed and when they became part of my subconscious and the shame versus guilt and all of that stuff. And it's so, there's so many layers when you deal with anything when you're a child. I mean, there's just so many different layers. And I call it,
So many
everybody, you
different
have to call it
layers,
a healing journey. You can't say I've healed. Because there's always another layer. And I
Right. It's
truly
a constant,
yep, and I truly believe God doesn't give me more than I can handle at the exact moment that I can handle it. So as I get better and as I, I've been, well, I'm older than you, obviously, but I'm as I get farther along, it's like, oh, here's another layer, and that makes total sense. And so
Absolutely.
yeah.
Well, and something that I'm just reflecting on about this, stuffing your feelings or like making it okay. Oh, they were doing the best they could with what they had, or like, I'm over it. It wasn't a big deal. Is in the, so if you're in a situation that causes you pain and hurt, and the other person is not willing to acknowledge that pain and hurt, and you have no power to remove yourself from the situation. So you're a kid, right? You're a kid, you're in pain. You can't be validated for that pain and you can't get out of the painful situation. Basically, the next option left to you is to make it okay and to distance yourself from that painful experience, right? To say, okay, it wasn't a big deal. I'm going to make it okay. Like I've been traumatized and I've been hurt, but there's no scope in which I can process that. So now, what am I going to do? I'm going to make it okay for myself. I'm going to say that it wasn't a big deal. I'm going to justify it, all that things, because that's a basically a survival strategy to live in an environment that is harmful to you and painful to you.
Absolutely.
And so it makes perfect sense in that time when you're stuck in something that you cannot get away from, that that's how you're going to learn to cope. What I've seen is that then translates over into other relationships. Like I had an experience in a romantic relationship where I noticed like something painful happened, right? And I'd become attached to this person. And instead of like walking away or being like, ouch, that hurt. And when they didn't validate it, saying, you know what, I'm not here for hurt, it was that same kind of trying to regain the
Make it
attachment and
better.
trying to make it okay for myself and make it better. So those dynamics often subconsciously, we then end up playing out in a situation where we do have the power to walk away or leave, but it's so ingrained from a little kid point of view to just justify or, make ourselves the problem. That's like one of my strategies for coping is, okay, if my family's not going to acknowledge this, that there's a problem, then I must be the problem, and let's make it a problem with me. I mean, and lots of kids do this, right? Let's make it a problem with me and let's try to fix me. And I,
Right.
you know, after 15 or 20 years of trying to fix me, one of the sort of turning points with the depression was to say, oh, maybe some of this isn't actually a me problem. Maybe it's an environment problem. Maybe it's a you problem. And I have just decided that my feelings about it are the problem. And like, if I can just uncover the next subconscious layer. And I mean, that was my go-to over and over again. And then I was like, what is the one thing I'm not willing to acknowledge or look at is my family was off limits. I could not criticize my family. I could not be upset with my family. And then when I started to say, oh yeah, actually, let me own that, like, maybe I'm not entirely the dysfunctional, screwed up one. Maybe actually there's some things that happened in my environment or in my family that are having an impact on me, and I can name them. I don't have to be so twisted up anymore. And that did make a big difference. And I think probably for all of them, through some version of family dysfunction, it's like, if you can start to name, like, oh, that's not normal, that is dysfunctional, that is problematic, it's not just me, you're going to start to have some more space and more relief.
And I say that's why there's advocates out here like you and me and all the other people that are out there, because you don't
Yeah.
know what you don't know. And if you grew up in it and you're just content and going through and saying yes to everybody because you don't want to rock the boat, you don't want to be confrontational, and it's a vicious cycle. So it's that, again, that awareness and that being able to say. So
Absolutely.
if you had someone say that's listening to this and they are, because a lot of the people I talk to that comment after the show will say, I didn't even realize. Well, okay, so here we are now, and
Yeah.
somebody realizes, wow, maybe I should go deeper, or maybe I should start to analyze these things or really think through them. What would be your first step for them?
Somebody once said to me that it was just really powerful. They said, your feelings are not up for negotiation. They are the lived experience of the moment that you're in. I can't tell you how many people I know who argue with how they feel. I shouldn't be feeling this way. I'm just overreacting, all these kinds of things. So know that your feelings are actually here for a reason and have important information for you. The other thing that was given to me is that your feelings result out of your needs being met or not being met. And so your feelings are purely indicators of needs. And that was also so helpful for me. And so I started to think about it as a little like red flag, like, hey, there's a need here that you might need to pay attention to. And that's why a feeling is showing up. And that just changed my relationship to my emotional landscape and stopped making, got me out of feeling so wrong about
Right.
everything, who I was, what I was experiencing, and started to give me some avenue to explore and to be curious and to excavate what was actually happening for me. So I think that is a great place to begin.
And you can do it. I tell people I used to carry around a little notebook because I don't always, in the moment, you don't always know why you react the way you react or why something makes you mad. And sometimes I would just write it down, like, sitting at the this and somebody said this, and then go sit with it later when you're quiet, or journal about it, or write about it, or write a letter to yourself. I did a lot. I mean, you probably did too, since you started our conversation with talking about going back to your 3 and 5 year old self. You probably have done a lot of inner child work where. Have, and that's, to me, it's everybody should do that. There's always something to be curious about, and there's always something to, and that's the best word, is curious, not judgmental, not condescending, or
Absolutely.
not question, not even, I mean, not reacting to how you feel, just knowing how you feel and questioning and being curious about why. But knowing that no matter what it is,
Yeah,
it's okay.
getting curious. so valuable to get curious and investigate in that way. And I was listening to Gabor Mate, who is somebody that
I love
has
him.
given me a lot of insight into, you know, childhood trauma and so forth. And he was talking about this question that he asked people that are like, oh, I didn't have any trauma in my childhood. He's like, well, who did you go to if you had an upset or if you needed to talk about something? Or, and like very quickly people realize, wow, I didn't have anybody. And that in itself is a form of trauma. And then to really think about like we tend to say, like one of the things that happens for people is like, oh, I didn't have it that bad. Like there are people that had it much worse than me in my childhood, suffering. And one of the things he said is like, would you go to your little child that's hurting and tell them how, you know, how their feelings are irrelevant because somebody is dying and of starvation in a foreign country? No, you wouldn't. You would sit there and be like, oh, sweetheart, like, let me hear about your feelings. And like to integrate that into our self-talk of like, oh yeah, there's a hurting little child inside. And how would I respond if there were a hurting little child in front of me? And what kind of care or presence would I bring to them? Like you would probably not talk to that child, or if thinking about it as yourself is too much, you probably wouldn't talk to another child in that way. So how would you respond to a hurting child? And that can really inform how you start talking to yourself. I also think that because so much of my, I think most of our emotional pain, a lot of the time is relational. It has to do with breakdowns in relationships, things like that, that having therapeutic and healing relationships in your life is a really important ingredient of healing. They don't have to be formal, but to have the kinds of people that can help you repair some of those layers is really valuable. I think there's a lot of healing that can be done on your own and through your own inner inquiry and work. And after being in therapy and working with various people that have been really helpful to me, I think there is a layer of healing and support that happens when you have that empathic witness, when you have a caring, supportive person, when you have a container where someone else is there with you and helping you heal and holding that space for you as well. And like, if you don't have anybody in your life starting out, right, start with yourself and then just look for the little moments of kindness that people bring into your world. There are professionals that you can reach out to. I know for a long time, I didn't trust other people to, I just was afraid of being judged and thinking that I was crazy and screwed up and all these kinds of things. So it took me a long time, and also people who were well-meaning but not helpful, right? Misinformed, like giving me advice that didn't really help. So finding your people and finding the supports that's going to really work for you can be a little bit of a journey. I invite you to reconnect with that sense of trusting yourself. So many of us who have gone through traumatic childhoods are so out of touch with the ability to trust ourselves and our own experience. And the more you can start to get in touch, and like through the feelings is one of the ways, but more than you can start to get in touch with trust of yourself and trust of your own experience, the more you're going to start to come back to sort of wholeness and ability to navigate through the world a little bit easier.
Absolutely. And I love that you say that it takes a support group. It takes people that are going to validate you as well. And I'm a big fan. It took a lot before I would look from the outside, because I just kind of figured, like you said, you figure there's something wrong with me. How can I fix me? But I also knew that everything I needed, I had inside of me. I truly always believed that.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to fix all that. I had to fix how I thought about me, like you said. And I remember I tell people all the time, treat yourself like your own best friend. You wouldn't be judgmental. You wouldn't set standards so high for someone you cared about. You wouldn't talk to your own best friend the way you talk to yourself. So don't do it. And that's one of the
Yeah,
that's a hard
absolutely.
thing to do. But I just said, if the little self-critic comes up here and says something to you and you wouldn't say it to your own best friend, then reword it. Like, make yourself reword it and
Yeah.
treat just have some
And I think
ahead.
above and beyond that, like a thing that I really realized doing a lot of work with the subconscious is that all of the voices in yourself, all of the, even the really harsh negative self-talk, it all served a purpose and like continues. If you understand what need that part of yourself is trying to meet, like, oh, why am I telling myself these horrible things? Oh, I'm trying to keep myself safe. Or like for me, it was like certain things I would see like the value or need behind something. Like I'd be really upset about something or like judging myself for like not being a good enough person or things like this. And then I started to look behind it and seeing, oh, what's the need behind that? The need behind that is actually I deeply care and I deeply care about being a considerate and caring person. So in the moment that it feels like I wasn't that, I am reaming myself, right? That was my response, was to just tear myself apart about not meeting my standard. But when I got to the underneath layer of it, which is like, oh, I so deeply care about being this kind of person. Okay, then I can find a gentler way to help myself get there rather than telling myself how horrible I was and how much I failed at being that. Yeah, just the inner critic. It's like, okay, what is this trying to do for me? It's trying to protect me, trying to keep me safe, trying to encourage me in a certain direction. Yeah, its strategies are pretty challenging a lot of the time. Like I mean, I'm thinking about like the no good, good for nothing, all that kind of stuff. Like, what is that trying to do for you? It's trying to like protect you in some way. It's a weird sort of reality, but there's a way in which it's here to serve a purpose, right? And I realize in the work with the subconscious is like, wow, you were really smart about trying to keep yourself safe and trying to help yourself survive. Some of your strategies, in a moment, they were really clever and they worked in that moment. And then you evolve into adulthood and the same strategies are running. The situation has changed. So now they become like real challenging limitations, right? Where
Yeah, they don't serve you anymore. They
maybe you,
serve you as children that
they
were
don't
in
serve
fight or
you.
flight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you.
Exactly. But if you can think and recognize, oh, that was an ingenious strategy at that moment to get me to survive. Thank you. The situation is not the same anymore. I don't need that same strategy. Actually, I'm safe now, and it's okay to speak up or share my feelings or whatever those versions are. To me, that's like there's some beauty in realizing, wow, you actually are not fucked up.
Right.
You are working incredibly well.
Right.
You are working to preserve yourself, to save yourself, to, and when you get like that in like that broader perspective of how much you're just trying to, like your subconscious is working to try to help you survive. It's like, oh, actually, this is brilliant. And one of the things that came up for me a little earlier in the conversation, which is so many of us are stuck with this question, like, what's wrong with me, right? And you were talking about what is something you can do to begin the journey is to start to ask, like, what's right about me,
Right.
or what's right about this situation, or what's to get out of that automatic wrongness and
Yep.
say, like, what works here? What's right about me? How is this actually a good thing? How is this actually serving me? How is this helping me? And stop, stop a little bit that self-judgment and self-criticism, which is really trying to tell you, like, how do I change to to be more in harmony with my life or to get people to love me, right? Like the what's wrong with me is like, if I can fix me, then the world will also respond to me in a more caring space. But it's really the, to me, it's really the failure of your primary caregivers to meet your evolutionary expectations, right? That you, by evolutionary design, required them to meet, right? So nurturing, love, care, food, water, shelter, whatever, that you internalized that because they didn't meet them, there was something wrong with you. But really, it was their failure to show up for you in the way that you required, like literally required for your survival. And
yeah, I always
that's
say, you
really
know,
what was going on there.
And you acquired so many different things and so many different traits. And I joke with people and I'm like, okay, so I'm going to take all the skills I learned from being a battered, abused, neglected child, and I'm going to use them as my superpowers. So like I learned manipulation from the best. So I'm a great salesman, you know, and it's like, but be kind to yourself. You know, yes, I did. I learned to be, and I used to get so mad at myself. Like, Tammy, you're so manipulative. You're like, you can lie with a smile on your face and nobody even knows. And I'm like, but I did that out of survival. I did, because I had to learn how to read a room. I had to learn how to, you know, pick up on all these subtle cues and all that stuff. Well, now I'm going to use it for
absolutely.
Good. I'm going to use it for good and find something good to do with that power, because you get it to a point. And I think somewhere in the conversation, it was like you said somewhere where all of a sudden I could feel like the switch, like you're like, okay, I'm a victor. I'm not a victim. I'm not. And you know, you just,
right.
But it's a lot of, it's work. But I always say, you know, healing is the simplest process, but the most difficult. Like the process is simple. The things that you can tell yourself and you can do these steps, but it's the actual going through and letting yourself do them and feel the emotions and allowing that, giving yourself that grace and that forgiveness. And that's what's difficult, but the steps are easy. If it makes sense.
Yeah. What I find is like the things that I find that create the greatest shift, or that people are stuck on and like it feels so hard. For me, it comes back to whether or not you have adequately addressed the core wound or dealt with the role of the subconscious. Because when we try to put habits and behaviors and perspectives over top of something that the subconscious is doing to try to help us, and we don't give the subconscious a new strategy or a new tool, we're just taking away, you know, like, oh, stop doing that. But we don't help the subconscious integrate and have a new tool, it's going to go back to its default strategy.
Right.
But when we get to the level of like, where is this originating in your subconscious, and give the subconscious new information and new strategy, then things can shift so easily. Like I think about, you were talking a little bit about being a people pleaser, and that's one area that I've seen some remarkable changes with folks in the people pleasing. And almost always it comes back to a little child self who is afraid of abandonment. And so when I do the work with my clients around really parenting that inner child part of yourself, giving the inner child the security, whatever, then they'll go out in the world and they'll tell me like, oh, it's like such a different experience. Like, I don't have the same problem saying no to people. Like, I know I'm going to be okay. It doesn't feel like this survival, like I'm going to die if I don't, because we've integrated the subconscious to help it to see the role it's playing, help it feel okay, and then have some different strategies. And then also recognizing, like, you know, I teach my clients, like, when is the inner child tugging at your sleeve? When is the inner child saying, hey, I need you. I need you to protect me. I need your support. I need your attention. And that when you can start to, like, when those feelings come up and you recognize it, not as like whatever is happening in your moment, your this moment reality, but, oh, this is an inner child part that is telling me it needs something. It can shift the whole dynamic. And then you're like, oh, okay, I'm here for you. I got your back. I'm not going to let anything bad happen to you. We can handle this. And then there's an integration that happens, and then makes it easier to move through the world. So I just, for me, the work with the subconscious is just such a phenomenal ingredient to the healing journey that, like, for me, it was like so many years I was struggling, and one of the keys was, oh, there's a subconscious layer that if you can learn how to work with and integrate, it's gonna, you know, or like habit change, like you're struggling with a habit, you're trying new behaviors. It's really slow going because you're fighting your subconscious every step of the way. When you can address the subconscious's need that that behavior is fulfilling, then sometimes it's like it even just disappears because I'm like, oh, I don't need to do that thing anymore.
Exactly. And, positive affirmations, all of that is great on the surface level, and they're very important. But it's like I say, you got to fix it at the subconscious level, because you can say to
Yeah,
yourself, I
the
love
root.
you, you're worthy. I tell people, you got the not enoughs. You don't think you're good enough. You just don't, I just call them the not enoughs. And so you can wake up every morning and say, I'm beautiful, I am loved, I am this, I am that. But then when you go to make a split decision, you're still reacting. If you don't truly believe that, you're reacting from your subconscious, and then you're going to react on
I
that.
there's a ch there's a part in the book where I talk about, you know, positive affirmations and in a time and place they can be very helpful, and then in a time and in place it's basically overriding yourself and being like, I'm just gonna dismiss this reality and I'm just gonna put something else on top of it, and like, so it can be an act of sort of shutting yourself up, kind of, instead of like, you know, I'm hurting and in pain, it's like, no, shut up, you're happy and everything's okay. Right. So it can be another form of sort of denial of yourself. So to really look at that and to own when it is truly helpful and encouraging, and when it's just a band-aid that's actually covering up the deeper wound that needs to be excavated or healed. Or like, it's like, you don't, like, don't use a band-aid when you need surgery. Surgery is painful and challenging, but ultimately it's going to get you to healing. If you just put a band-aid over it, the wound is just going to keep on festering. And so to know when actually a band-aid is great and it's going to work, and when what's required is a little deeper surgery that will ultimately get you to the full place of healing.
Exactly. Well, this has been super fun. I thought about that, like, when I taught first grade, I used to give positive affirmations. And now then when I went through more training and more really learning about the subconscious and everything, and I realized why I felt like I could see, like, the little kids getting their self-esteem. You can see in a classroom when you're teaching the ones that are just not getting what they need at home. And that's why I would do that. And I would make this little I am wall, and I would say, I am beautiful, and I am this, and I am that. And we would do it every morning. And I was like, that was years ago. That was before, like, positive affirmations were a thing. I just thought it was fun, and I just felt like they needed to hear it, but I felt like they needed to hear it from me. So by me writing them and by us saying them, because I would say you are, and they were saying I am, as we did this, went through our list of our 10 things, so I was saying you are amazing, you are beautiful. And so that was, to me, now that I'm thinking back, like, that was the validation, because they weren't getting it from their mom and from their
Absolutely.
dad. So it wasn't the same as just them
Somebody to
saying, I
see
am
them.
beautiful. It was also, like you said, integrating me. Like, it was putting it together with, I am giving them that validation. And I love that. I think
And
every
you
class
seeing
should have an
them
I
and you
am wall.
acknowledging that they could own that. They get to own it then, because you're giving it, you're saying, actually, no, like, who cares what your family is saying? Here I am, an authority, an adult in your attachment figure in your life, and I see that you're beautiful and I see that you're amazing. And so then they can start to internalize some part of themselves. It's like, oh, well, maybe I get to be that too. And
And
so,
I
yeah, super, super powerful.
and it so it's like kind of like going back, like, I was at that time going through a little bit of inner child work myself, but I was like, okay, these kids need this now. They can't wait till they're 40 or 30 or 20. They need it now.
Absolutely.
So, well, this was super
Well,
fun.
my actually work started. My work started working with children. That's how I got into healing, was actually working with children and seeing the, the wanting to protect children from the pains so that they wouldn't have to end up in therapy, right? And
Yep,
then I
that's
got up into working with adults, healing the child part. So yeah. But yeah, this has been great. Thank you. I love
so
talking
if
about this stuff. We could talk about it forever.
I
So
was gonna say I could literally talk all day to you. But I love that we're on, the inner child, it's real, it's there, it's inside of you, and it needs to be loved and acknowledged and validated. And you've got great coaches and people out there that can help you do it. But Alana, if people want to work with you, talk to you, whatever, what's the best place for them to reach out to you?
yeah, I would say come over to my Facebook page. So it's my name's Alana Davidson. I think my hashtag is Alana Magic. So you can find me there. I post all of the different interviews that I do there. If you want to send me a message there, that's a great way to communicate, easy way to find me. And there should be a link also in, if you go to my page, there should be a link to get a free copy of my book there. So you can check out my book. I go much deeper into working with the inner child, with the subconscious, with being empathic, all these pieces. I kind of bring them together and give a bunch of tools that you can start to work with for your own journey.
Amazing.
So that's a, if you're getting started on this journey or looking for more resources or tools, that book will have several things that will point you in some new directions.
Right. Because a lot of times people, I mean, a lot of the people that listen to this are on this, they're just now becoming aware that there was even a problem. And I love to
Yeah.
see the awakening of, oh my gosh, there's hope, because there's always hope. And what is the name of your book again? Remind us again.
Finding Your Own Happy.
Okay, Finding Your Own Happy by Alana Davidson. So go check it out, and it will be in the show
Yes.
notes. All of that stuff will be in the show notes. But before you leave us, I want you to give some words of advice or words of wisdom or something to leave them with. Although you already gave a good one, and I'm going to probably put that in the show notes too, that one quote you gave, but give us something else. Or you can repeat that.
I think, yeah. What comes to me so often and what inspired me to be on this healing journey was how many people walk around thinking that they're wrong and broken and that there's something really wrong with them. And I just want you to know that there's nothing wrong with you. You work incredibly well. You just may not have found the perspective or the tools that are helping you get to that place. So just know that you are way more beautiful, powerful, amazing, and capable than you've ever given yourself credit for. And I invite you to discover what's right with you and the beautiful gift and being that you are.
Perfect. Very well said. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Well, thank you so much. And for
Liz, thank
everybody else
you.
out there listening, there you go. There's a big heart. You can't see it, but there's a big heart. And for everybody else out there listening, join back in and get more and more and more and more stories of hope and healing. Thank you very much. Thanks so much for joining me today on the Adult Child of Dysfunction podcast. If this episode resonated with you, or you think someone else could benefit from what you heard, why not share it with someone you care about? Let's heal from our past and take back control of our lives together. If you're interested in learning more, head on over to www.tammyvincent.com for a free chapter of my book, Surviving Alcoholic Parents. While you're there, be sure to catch my invigorating seminar, Awakening Your Authentic Self. Together, we will rewrite our stories and turn trials into triumphant smiles. Until next time, keep embracing your strength, keep being you, and know that you are more than enough. You are way more than enough right here, right now.